But I trapped you. Both of you ravens and your hunter son, too. And this ignorant boy found out your secrets. I know how to summon a god.
You can't even keep a raven with Geas, said Seraph. How could you summon a god?
She'd hoped to anger him with the reminder of Hanea's escape, but he was too excited about his discovery.
It will be easy, said Volus. The cormorant was the key.
And then, pacing back and forth, he began to pontificate upon pseudo-complexities of the orders that the wizards of his secret path had discovered over the years.
Lair, Seraph said softly underneath the flow of Volus's words. Is he shadowed?
Yes. Uncle Bandor, too, though not as deeply.
Seraph nodded her understanding, then turned her attention back to the ranting Volus.
I took the rings, one for each order. The secret path only has 4 healer rings, but none of them work right. So they gave me this one to do as I wish. I have 1 for each of the orders, but with your daughter, I don't need the cormorant.
He looked at Seraph, his face flushed with triumph.
I tried it with just the rings, but it didn't work because the spell calls for blood and death. Getting someone of each order is impractical. But then I remembered something I read about sympathetic magic. Using one thing to represent other things, like using a feather for air. I wrote to Telleridge, and he said he thought it might work. So all I needed was 1 of you.
He looked at Hanea and said spitefully,
I could have used you, but I thought you liked me. I didn't want to hurt you. I could have saved myself a lot of trouble, couldn't I?
You might have, Hanea agreed mildly.
He didn't know what to say to that, so he turned his attention back to Seraph.
I thought that it would be easier to use the youngest one. It wasn't hard to persuade Bandor that she was in danger and I could help her. You should be proud, Seraph. Your daughter's death will return the eagle to the world.
Sweat dripped from his forehead, though on the other side of his barrier, Seraph's breath fogged in the cold. Evidently, the barrier blocked the effects of Jess's ire.
Salcenti wizards, said Seraph, slowly shaking her head. Always making things much more complicated than they really are. The Stalker is already here at your request.
She smiled at him.
You know I speak the truth.
His eyes widened for an instant as his stolen owl ring, once she'd called his attention to it, told him she was right. Then he narrowed his eyes accusingly.
You just think you speak the truth, that's all it means. You are wrong.
I can't give you proof of the Stalker, agreed Seraph mildly. You'd have to be Hunter to see what you have done in your stupidity.
He didn't like to hear the word stupid, especially as he knew that she meant it. But he wasn't going to lose his temper enough for her purposes. He was too buoyed up by his plans. She'd have to bring Jess into it.
I can show you what Eagle is, she said.
The whole time they'd spent talking, Seraph had been sorting through the intricate work of the spell, holding the barrier together. If he'd just used Salcenti magic, she might not have been able to break it. But he'd woven Raven and Salcenti magic together, and the result was unstable.
Jess, she said, go get Rennie and keep her safe. Lair, when you can, take Bandor.
Volus frowned at her words.
Jess? Isn't that the name of your idiot son? He's not here.
He shivered once.
Yes, said Seraph. He is. You just aren't looking. Jess, the priest wants to get a good look at you.
The guardian was nothing if not dramatic, coalescing out of candle smoke into the oversized wolf he favored over other forms. He stood not 2 paces from Volus, frost shading his coat and moving from his paws to the hem of Volus's robes. Jess growled a low rumbling sound. Seraph's pulse picked up until she could hear the sound of her heartbeat in her ears.
Volus, who had no warning or understanding of what Jess was, cried out in terror. That fear did for Volus's magic what anger had once done for Seraph's. His control of raven magic failed, and Seraph ripped the barrier into pieces with a sweep of power. "This is my eldest son, Jess," she said, "who is eagle and guardian, and in no need of your summons." She kicked aside the carefully placed candles, breaking the circles and removing any temptation he might have had to kill Rinny. As she walked, she continued speaking, quoting from the Book of Orders. "Thus it is said that when the Elder Wizards took upon themselves the need to fight the Shadow Stalker, that they created them the Orders. 6 Orders created they them, after the 6 who slept forever. First, Raven Mage. 2nd, Cormorant Weather Witch to aid their travels. And 3rd created was Healer, who is Lark, that they might survive to continue the fight. They rested, and then made 4th, the Bard and Owl to ease their way among strangers. 5th, Falcon, the Hunter, to feed them at need. Last created they Eagle, who is guardian for all to fear. The Guardian, Volus, is an order like any other, though, as you can see, more difficult to detect." Jess took back his human form and gathered Rinny into his arms.
"The priest is wrong,"
he said, and the voice thundered in bass notes almost too deep to hear, as if he still held partway to the wolf shape.
"He's been shadowed," agreed Seraph. But Seraph had given the priest too long. He threw a blast of raw magic at her, and she was forced to counter it. More than counter it, because she had to protect those around her. She held the magic for a moment, then returned it to him. Because it was his magic, it did not harm him, just allowed him to reabsorb it. Not an ideal solution, because he retrieved the energy he'd sent at her, but no one else got hurt. While she'd been trying to decide what to do with it, he'd had time to gather more power, and he flung it at her, forcing her back several steps. She caught it and flung it back again, but it was more of an effort. She couldn't keep doing it indefinitely because she continued to lose power, and he didn't. He also learned quickly. The 3rd shot was no less powerful, but he broadened his target to include everyone in the room. She had no choice but to absorb the full force of his hit, or let something escape where it might hurt one of her children. Tears of pain slipped down her face as she staggered and swayed. Then, someone touched her, and the pain lessened. For a dazed instant, the voice and strong hands that pressed into her shoulders were tears. Then, as the effects of the priest's attack faded, she realized it was Henea behind her, offering her support and power. She needed a shield like the one Volus had set to encase them when they had entered the room, but she didn't have time to throw a shield around everyone. Instead, she created a shield and set it around Volus. For a moment, the whole area around Volus lit up, but then the shield fell apart, a victim of its hasty construction. He laughed.
"Try this,"
he said, and sketched a sigil in the air. She blocked most of it, but the straining of her magic past her reserves almost blinded her with pain, and the remnants of his sorcery sent both Seraph and Henea tumbling to the ground. She wouldn't be able to hold out against a second such blast.
"Henea," she whispered, "when I tell you, jump away, then get the others out of here."
If she could distract Volus long enough, maybe her children could escape.
"No,"
said Henea.
A breeze blew a stray lock of hair into Seraph's eyes. Wrath lighting his face, Volus drew back his hand in the manner of a man throwing a rock. Henea took control of the remnants of Seraph's shields and refined them as Volus's hand released whatever it was he'd formed, and the spell bounced off harmlessly. Wind cooled the sweat on Seraph's forehead. She had just enough time to realize that there shouldn't be a wind when a sudden gust of it knocked her to her knees. The wind picked up even more speed, turning Seraph's hair into a vicious whip that stung her eyes and cheeks as her left knee made painful contact with the floor. The table Volus had been working on skidded across the floor, hit the wall, then flung itself at the priest's head. Temporarily occupied defending himself from his furnishings, Volus quit concentrating on Seraph, but any magic would draw his attention. Seraph drew her knife and staggered to her feet, bracing herself against the wind.
Hanea, she said, her voice low, is there a cure for the shadowing that you know and I do not?
Seraph thought for a moment that Hanea had fallen too far away to hear her, but then Hanea said,
No, there is no cure but death.
Seraph crouched and used the motion of the wind and a feathering of magic to creep up behind Volus. When she was close enough, she rushed forward and stepped on the back of his knee, collapsing the joint so the wizard staggered backward off balance. She threw her left arm around his chin to hold him steady and jerked her knife into his neck as Tyr had once taught her. The sharp knife cut through Volus's throat, severing skin and artery. Seraph stumbled back, fighting the wind for her balance. Victory came so quickly, brought to her by the sharp blade of her knife. Her first kill. She wondered if she'd used magic to kill him, if it would seem more real to her. The young man's body fought for a while, but pain blocked his own magic, and the extremity of his emotions kept raven magic from coming to his aid, rings or no. Seraph watched because it seemed an act of cowardice to turn away from a death she had summoned. When he was dead, Seraph turned away to survey the room. Lair, bless him, had remembered what she told him. He had Bandor pinned, face against the wall in some sort of wrestling hold. Hanea had gotten to her hands and knees and crawled against the wind toward Volus's body. Jess, looking exhausted, sat on the floor near.
Ah, Seraph thought ruefully. That's where the wind came from.
Rinny's hair spread out in pale flames as she stood motionless, arms spread with palms out like some ancient statue, her skirts absolutely still, though the wind still tore furiously through the room. Jess must have cut her loose because there were no ropes on her, though lines on either side of her mouth showed where they had been. Her eyes glowed with an eerie gold light that obscured her pupils. Words of warning long forgotten came back to Seraph. To be a weather witch was always to long for the energies that coursed and strew themselves in tempestuous weather, always to be in danger of being so caught up that there was no way back.
Rinny, she said firmly, we are safe. Call back the winds and let them sleep.
Her daughter stared blankly at her with incandescent eyes, and the winds swirled and played. An inkwell flipped out of nowhere and caught Seraph painfully on the elbow.
Rinny,
barked Seraph in the same tone she used to break up sibling squabbles.
Enough!
Rinny blinked, and the wind died down to gentle gusts and then nothing. Small items dropped to the ground with clattering noises. Rinny fell to her hands and knees, and Seraph hurried across the room and crouched beside her.
How is it with you? Are you well?
Rinny nodded.
Sorry, Mother. I'm just a bit dizzy.
Then she gave a ghost of her usual grin to Jess.
That was better than changing into an animal.
Mother, said Lair, what do you need to do with Uncle Bandor? I can't hold him here forever.
Bandor was shadowed. Her hand tightened on her knife, but before she could do more than rise back to her feet, Hanea said,
No, Seraph, I lied. The shadow can be cleansed.
Seraph stilled.
What?
Hanea sat on the floor beside the dead priest, her cheeks painted with his blood.
I lied. I swore that this one would die. It is fitting that he should die in his sins, but I can cleanse the baker with your help. Seraph? Bandor?
Alaneth's voice rang down the corridor. If she and Hanea were going to help Bandor, Seraph didn't have time to be angry with her now.
Jess, can you keep Alaneth at bay without hurting her or yourself? Asked Seraph.
If we are working more magic tonight, we can't have her interrupting us.
Yes,
said Jess, using the wall to get to his feet. He took a couple of half-drunken steps and came to the doorway. Alaneth got there first, but stopped just short of Jess.
We need to get this done, said Seraph. I think I could just possibly light a mage light. Do you have the magic, and can you concentrate well enough to use it?
Hanea rose painfully to her feet, using her good arm for leverage.
I think I'm too numb to hurt, and I am not as spent as you are. It'll be all right.
She limped over to Lair and Bandor and spoke a word. Glowing lines circled Bandor's wrists and ankles.
Release him, please,
she said, and Lair stepped away from him. With the silvery threads of magic, Hanea forced Bandor around so that he stood with his back flat against the wall. He spat at her.
Shadowspawn witch! You should burn in the fires of good rowan and oak!
Ignoring him, Hanea reached for his head and forced him to look at her. Seraph stood as near as she dared. Hanea took a firm grip on Bandor's hair and then set another glowing line about his forehead to hold his head where she wanted it.
You can't allow them to distract you,
she explained to Seraph in Traveler's speech.
If you have to start again, it's twice as hard to grasp it.
Once she had him unable to move, she reached up to place a hand on his forehead. He struggled then, fighting the restraints like a madman. But Hanea had done a good job, and his head never moved.
It's hard to find, the shadowing. It'll help if I'm more familiar with him. Tell me something of him. How the shadow caught him.
His name is Bandor, said Seraph. He is married to my husband's sister. He has always been a man of even temperament, a fair man if a bit greedy.
But only a bit. The low price he'd given her for Jess's honey had been out of character, she realized. With family, he'd always been inclined to be generous.
His parents were not Redurni, and he was never really accepted until he married Alaneth, my husband's sister.
Hanea sent off questioning tendrils of magic, which passed through Bandor like a hot knife through butter, slipping and sliding.
What does he want? Hanea asked. What drives him?
That was harder.
I don't know, Seraph said finally. Reducing a man to a handful of words is no gift of mine.
She turned to her youngest, who knew him best.
Rinny, she said in common tongue. If Uncle Bandor could be or have anything in the world, what would he want?
Children, said Rinny promptly, though her voice shook. He and Aunt Alaneth want children more than anything. He also worries that Papa might decide to return to the bakery. Last year, when the harvests weren't good, he was certain Papa would take the bakery. Nothing Papa said could reassure him.
Seraph remembered that now. It hadn't seemed important at the time. One of the tendrils of Hanea's magic snagged and went taut, like a fisherman's net. Another slid to the same place and stuck fast as well. A third caught another place.
More, said Hanea. Tell me more about him, child.
He loves Aunt Alaneth, Rinny said with more confidence. But he worries that she loves Papa better. He wants her to see him as a better man than Papa.
The rest of the tendrils snapped taut like the strings of a violin and emitted a sound as if an invisible musician plucked at the instrument.
Envy, murmured Hanea in the traveler tongue. Small darknesses that allow the shadow to take hold and shake him a bit until the small darkness grows like a blot on his soul. You have to ferret them all out, Seraph, and not miss any. Could you have your hunter see if I've missed anything?
Lair, said Seraph.
Come here and look. Does the net she's woven encase the taint?
Lair examined his uncle closely.
Missed something, he said.
He wants, murmured Seraph. He loves
He hates. He fears.
He's afraid of you, Mother,
said Rinny at last.
He doesn't much care for Jess either.
She gave her brother's back an apologetic look.
He doesn't like to be around people who are odd like Jess is.
Hanea, lines of strain appearing around her eyes and mouth, sent out more magic.
Done, said Lair.
Mother, said Jess. Seraph turned and saw that Alaneth had company in the doorway. Caradoc was with her. He'd managed to take a few steps forward, so he stood several paces in front of the door. But when Jess looked at him, he stilled once more.
We'll be done momentarily, said Hanea. I wouldn't try this without one who can see the shadow. Otherwise, it's too easy to fail, and you'll not know it until the shadowed one kills those nearest to him.
Like the Nameless King, the Shadowed, said Seraph. When he killed his sons first.
He allowed no travelers within his realm, said Hanea. So now we go where we are needed, not where we are wanted.
What next? Said Seraph.
Hanea smiled wearily.
The last part is more strength than finesse. I'll try to burn the shadow from him.
Let me help, said Seraph.
I'm all but done up, but you may freely take what magic I have left.
She followed her words with action, setting the blooded knife on the floor and placing her hands on Hanea's shoulders. Hanea thanked her with a nod and then set about destroying the hold the stalker had taken on Bandor's soul. It was, Seraph saw, much the same as burning wood with magic, just using a different fuel. If she had to do it herself, she'd know how.
Done,
said Hanea, but Seraph, feeling the last of the shadowing leave, had already stepped away. Bandor had long since stopped his struggles, but now he hung limply in the bonds that held him to the wall, his face blank and his mouth drooping on either side. A drop of spittle dripped slowly off his chin.
Lair, she said. Come help me with Bandor.
Lair helped Seraph brace his uncle so that Hanea could release him. Once on his feet, Bandor seemed to recover a bit. At least he could stand on his own, and his face started to lose the blankness and adopt some of Bandor's own personality, like a wineskin refilled with wine. Lair still braced him, but Seraph stepped away, remembering what Rinny had said about his fear of her. She didn't want to cause him any more distress than she had to.
All right, Jess, she said calmly. You can let them in now.
He stared at her a moment, then bowed his head shallowly. She hid her sigh of relief. The next few minutes were bound to be interesting enough without Jess running amok. Alaneth slipped around them all without a look and stood in front of Bandor.
Is it true?
She said.
Is he better now? Is he unharmed?
Seraph raised an eyebrow and looked at Hanea, who had collapsed against the wall. She nodded.
He'll be all right, Seraph said. Give him a while to recover, and he'll be all right.
Alaneth's mouth trembled, and she took one more step until she stood against her husband, looking small and frail.
Bandor, she said. Bandor.
Caradoc, leaning heavily on his staff, looked closely at Jess.
11 all favors you, boy, though you never come to his temple. That told me there was more to you than it appeared. I didn't expect quite this much more. Some of your mother's magic in you, eh, that kept us from coming in?
Yes, agreed Seraph. Jess is more than he appears.
Traveler,
Caradoc said sternly, as if reminded of his duty.
Traveler, what happened here?
Shadows and magic, priest, she said.
Volus and Bandor were shadow-touched. If I had known that the priest could be cured, I would have... She remembered the satisfaction of stopping him with her knife, and stopped, saying merely, I was ill-informed.
How did you know they were shadowed?
The old man, she thought, was playing the stern priest role to the hilt. It was a good sign. if he'd been frightened by all the magic, he wouldn't be taking the time to perform for his audience. He'd be getting the rest of the council elders.
"She found me tonight as Bandor left me," said Alanath as she and Lair helped Bandor sit on the floor. "Bruised and bound. I told her that there was something wrong with him, a bile of jealousy toward my brother after all these years."
There was a pause. Then she said,
"I don't know what exactly he did, but he had a hand in my brother's death."
She sat beside her husband and raised her chin in a familiar gesture.
"I have never approved of the choices my brother has made," she said. "I have no use for magic or Seraph. You know as much, Caradoc. I would never take her side against my Bandor. But I know that Bandor, if he were himself, would never hit me. He would never have made himself slave to another's will as he has enslaved himself to that false priest."
She spat out the words.
"If Seraph says that he was shadow-taken, well, I for one have to agree with her."
No one, thought Seraph with secret amusement, could miss how much it bothered Alanath to agree with Seraph. Caradoc nodded formally.
"Accepted."
He grinned at Seraph, transforming in an instant from sour old man to mischievous gnome.
"You should know that Alanath came to me several days ago concerned with the oddities of her husband's behavior. I told her to keep watch, for, as we all know, those of us who live in the Lee of Shadows Fall have always to be on guard against such."
He shook his head.
"But, of course, we'll have to tell a different story to everyone else, or Seraph won't be able to stay here, and no one will really believe that he was cleansed."
Bandor was huddled against his wife, bowing his forehead to touch the top of her shoulder. Seraph could hear his soft, half-coherent apologies. Caradoc leaned on his staff.
"Let me tell you what happened tonight. Volus is an evil mage, not a real priest. He needed a death to feed some dark magic and chose Rinny because he thought she was without protection. Her father is dead."
"Actually," said Lair.
"Probably not. That's what Mother and I were doing when Rinny was taken. We walked up to the place where the huntsman thought he found Father's remains. The bones weren't Father's. We think a group of human mages surprised Papa and took him."
"Alive?"
said Alanath.
"Tyr is alive?"
"Alive?"
asked Rinny, grabbing Jess's hand in a tight grip.
"I think so," said Seraph.
"Ah," said Caradoc. "Then Volus was one of a group of corrupt mages who helped him in his evil doings. He was responsible for a number of terrible happenings. Tyr's disappearance. Oh, I'll think of a few more things. I'm sure someone had a pet die in the last month or so. Volus has been watching your farm with his magic."
"Magic doesn't work like that," said Seraph. "Not even Solcenti magic."
"They won't know that," said Caradoc repressively. "When he saw that you were away from home, he kidnapped Rinny. Alanath saw him take Rinny by the bakery. She came to my temple to get Bandor, who had come to talk to me about suspicions that he had about Volus. I am an old man. Bandor and Alanath confronted Volus. He hurt Alanath, and Bandor killed him."
"What about us?" asked Seraph.
"You... none of you were here. I don't know who you are, young lady,"
he said to Hanea,
"but I can see what you are, and you'd be safer away from here."
"She can sleep at the farm tonight," said Seraph.
"How do you know that Tyr is alive?" asked Alanath.
"Because they took him to use his magic," replied Hanea.
"They can't use it with him dead. Not this soon."
"Liar,"
said Alanath, rising to her feet.
"My brother had no magic."
From his position on the floor, Bandor reached up and took his wife's hand.
"Yes," he said. "Yes, he did."
Alanath froze, staring at the hand she held. At last, she sank down again.
"Do you know where they took him?"
asked Caradoc when it became apparent Alanath wasn't going to say anything further.
"To Taella," answered Hanea. "To the Imperial Palace at Taella."
"Before we leave here,
Hanea and I will search the temple to make sure there's nothing left that could hurt anyone, said Seraph tiredly. They'd find all the order stones, too. She glanced at Volus, but his hands were bare. Hanea must have already taken the rings Volus had worn.
We'll go look for Papa tomorrow? Asked Lair.
Seraph considered it. The day after. We'll have to pack for the trip.
If you leave, the Sept Steward will take away your land rights, observed Alaneth. No, replied Caradoc. He won't. He'd never get anyone else to farm that close to the mountains. I'll have a talk with him myself.
Chapter 11 Early the next morning, Alaneth came to call. Seraph had already sent the boys and Rinnie out to the barn to sort through the tools and harness for things that they would need on their travel. Hanea was still asleep in the loft.
I didn't know how soon you were going, said Alaneth in a sideways apology for the hour of her call. I brought this.
She set down a large basket of journey bread on the table.
We made it yesterday, so it should last you a month or more if you need it.
She hadn't met Seraph's eyes since she came in. How is Bandor? Asked Seraph.
Almost himself again, though he doesn't remember much, said Alaneth, at last looking up. Thank you for giving him back to me.
I'm glad you came, Seraph said after they'd both taken a seat on the kitchen bench, which was pulled away from its customary place at the table. Otherwise, I would have come to you. The trip to Taela is a long one, and getting Tyr back might be dangerous. I hate to take Rinnie on a journey like that. Would you watch her for me?
Of course, Alaneth said after a moment of shock. Of course I will. There's plenty of space. She can have Tyr's old room.
Thank you, smiled Seraph. I told her that Bandor would not be feeling well for a while, and you needed her help. Give her something to do so she doesn't think I'm a liar.
I'll do that, said Alaneth. Caradoc wanted me to tell you that the other elders were happy with his story, all except Willen, who saw Bandor carrying Rinnie up to the temple. But Willen agreed to keep the real story quiet.
Alaneth reached into a large pouch she carried and brought out several pieces of folded parchment.
Willen sent these. Maps, he said. And Seraph...
Alaneth set a bag of coins on the table.
These are from the bakery's accounts. Use them as you need to. I'd like to have Tyr back also.
Seraph took the coins. Thank you. I won't deny that these will make the journey easier.
I'll come tomorrow morning about this time, said Alaneth, getting up briskly. To get Rinnie, and to see you safely on your way.
Thank you, Alaneth, said Seraph. Alaneth stopped at the doorway and turned back.
No, Seraph. Thank you. I appreciate your trust, especially after...
He had no choice, said Seraph. Remember that. Even shadowed, Bandor believed he was saving Rinnie. The next morning was cold, and the sun a pale line against the mountain as they adjusted the packs on skew. Gurra whined at Seraph from his self-appointed guard post by the packs still to be loaded. Fool dog, Seraph said not unkindly. You're coming too.
But not me,
said Rinnie from the porch. I need you to take care of your aunt and uncle for me, said Seraph. Aunt Alaneth would like nothing better than to drop everything and to come with us, but she needs to take care of Bandor and the bakery. She took a deep breath. And I need you safe. Please. Rinnie stared at her hard.
All right, she said. I'll stay.
Seraph, Hanea, Jess, and Lair set out for Taela before the sun was full up, while Alaneth and Rinnie watched from the porch. A few miles to the south, the path from the farm joined to the main road. Though Willen's maps were useful, finding a road to Taela was no more difficult than finding a stream that would lead to the ocean. It's hard leaving Rinnie behind. Lair patted Skew's neck,
I miss her already.
I miss everything, said Jess happily.
Lair lost his grim air and thumped Jess on his pack where it rested between his shoulders.
I see that you do.
Do you know where your clan is?
Seraph asked Hanea, who walked beside her at the back of the small caravan.
No, said Hanea, but I can find them when I want to. I'll be of more use to you than I'll be to them.
Hanea, said Seraph softly.
Yes?
If you ever lie to me for your own ends again, as you did when I killed the priest for you, there will be a reckoning.
I will bear that in mind, Hanea said.
See that you do.
Seraph deliberately cut the first day's travel short. Hanea was looking pale and drawn. Though her arm was healing nicely, it was still painful. The tent that they'd brought was the old one Seraph had used when she'd traveled with her brother. Seraph expected it would take a few days of practice before they could put it up in the dark. After supper, she left the boys to clean up and took out Isolde the Silence Memora.
So, you are the last survivor of your clan, said Hanea.
Seraph loosened the top of her bag so Hanea could see the assorted memorae she carried.
The last of any number of clans, she said.
How many? Hanea asked in a horrified whisper.
224, replied Seraph.
Hanea frowned. Why did they all come to you?
You mean as opposed to a clan leader who actually had a clan?
Seraph shrugged.
I don't know. I've given it a lot of thought over the years. The last 83 I found in one cache, presumably taken from one leader. That could mean that the memorae are being drawn by the other memorae. The more memorae someone has, the more likely it is that a lost clan's memorae will come to them. Or perhaps Shadow's Fall might have some influence on it.
It's more than that, said Hanea slowly. How did you find a Salcenti who was ordered? Why did the two of you have three ordered children? It isn't like breeding horses. The orders go where they will, though I really did think that the order bearer had to at least be of traveler blood. I don't know many clans who can claim five ordered people. Nor have I heard of a family where every single person in the family was born to an order.
It frightens me, admitted Seraph, glancing at the boys who were packing away the last of the dinnerware. My father's favorite saying was, when you find a coin on the road and pick it up, it's certain that you'll need twice that ere you walk another mile. He used to say that the orders went where they were most necessary. I don't want to be in the middle of an event that needs a raven, owl, eagle, falcon, and cormorant.
Hanea smiled a little.
Neither do I. Maybe I should go my own way.
She was joking, but Seraph nodded solemnly. I would keep that in mind. Having you help us find Tyr would be very helpful, but certainly dangerous. There is no need for you to risk your life for someone you've never even met. Hanea laughed and shook her head.
That's the raven's calling, you know that. Go out and risk your life for someone who'd just as soon that you burned as lived.
Perverse, grinned Seraph.
It did always seem that the ones who most needed help were the ones who wanted it least. Anyway, I got the Memora out to call Isolde's house and see if someone in her time had managed something like the ordered stones.
They didn't have the orders when Isolde's library was collected, said Hanea.
No, agreed Seraph, but they did a lot of evil in the search for knowledge. They might have come up with something that will help us. I don't want to destroy those stones without understanding what that will do to the order trapped there.
Jess and Lair, finished with their tasks, came to see what Seraph was doing. She pushed the Memora into the dirt and called Isolde's house into being.
Come in, she said. Come and be welcome to the house of Isolde the Silent.
They settled into the patterns of journeying that Seraph remembered. Hanea and Jess in front, Seraph and Lair bringing up the rear with Skew. Gura scouted about, taking anxious trips back to make certain they were all still walking as he'd left them. After a week's travel, Seraph felt as if she were slowly sloughing off the skin of the Redurne farmer's wife she had been. Every evening she took out Isolde's Memora and searched through her library to find out what to do with the ordered stones.
"Why don't you use them?" asked Lair one evening. He was seated on the other side of the little table from Seraph, playing with the game pieces to a game no one knew how to play. "We almost lost all to Volus, and there will be more wizards with Papa. Wouldn't the extra power be useful?"
"Travelers don't like to deal with the dead," said Jess.
He was curled up on the floor with as much of Gura on his lap as he could get, grooming the dog with a silver comb that Isolde had kept by her bed.
"It's not that exactly," said Hanea, looking up from a book. "But we understand that it can be dangerous to play with dark magics."
"Especially when doing so leaves you vulnerable to the stalker," agreed Seraph. "Since we have seen that he is already concerned in these matters, we'd be foolish to allow him an invitation to one of us."
"I like walking," said Jess contentedly.
Hanea looked over at him. His eyes were half shut, and his face raised toward the sun. Seraph and Lair had dropped behind them a while back. Jess's usual pace was faster than Skew liked. Seraph didn't want to push the old horse, so Hanea and Jess would walk ahead and then sit and wait for the others to catch up.
"What do you like about it?" she asked him.
"The Guardian is happy because we're going to get Papa," he said. "And Rinny is safe with Aunt Alaneth. I don't like Aunt Alaneth, but I know that Rinny does. I know that Aunt Alaneth will keep her safe. Mother and Lair are safe too, because they are with me, and with Skew and Gura. I am outside, and the sun is shining and making my face warm."
"I like walking too," Hanea admitted.
"Why?"
He bounced once on his heels and then turned his head to look at her with a bright smile that lit his eyes and summoned the deep dimple in his cheek. She smiled back. She'd found that it was impossible not to respond to Jess when he was happy. "For the same reasons you have. Walking means that right this moment, nothing bad is happening. There are interesting things to look at. My feet like to feel the road under them."
"Yes," he said contentedly. "It's just like that."
After a minute, he said,
"Lair is not happy."
"He doesn't like walking?" she asked.
He frowned.
"I don't think that's it. I think he worries too much. He is like the Guardian, you know. He thinks that he needs to take care of everyone. He doesn't know about walking. He finds things that are bad and tries to solve them before they happen."
Hanea said, "You know your brother pretty well, don't you?" Jess nodded.
"He is my brother and I love him. He is not afraid of the Guardian. He loves the Guardian too. I like that. Rinny loves us too, but she doesn't want to be a Guardian anymore because she can play with the wind."
"I like your family, Jess," Hanea said softly. He smiled again.
"I do, too."
A week's travel from Corhaden, the first of the large cities that lay between them and Taela, they stopped to eat lunch a little distance from another, larger party that they'd been trailing for a few days.
"We could eat on the road, Mother," said Lair to Seraph as she sat down beside him. "We could make another mile in the time it takes for Jess to finish eating."
She shook her head. "And lose more miles in a few days when Skew is too tired to go on. It's all right to push hard if your journey's end is in a day or two, but we have to strike a speed that we can hold on to for a month or more. How is that blister you had?"
"Fine."
"Traveler whore!"
Seraph was on her feet before the young man's bellow had finished. Her eyes found Hanea standing by the side of the swift-running creek, her drinking cup loose in her hand while a chunk of wet mud slid from her cheek. Shock made her look young and vulnerable, but that wouldn't last. Before Seraph could take more than a step or two, Jess, with Gura at his side,
stood between Hanea and the small group of young men.
"Apologize,"
whispered Jess. Seraph increased her speed. The men backed away, most of them mumbling apologies. If they stared at the huge growling dog, or Jess, rather than looking at Hanea, it was understandable.
"Go," Jess said. "Leave us alone and we'll do the same."
"Hey, what goes on here? Are you vagabonds threatening my sons?"
"Jess, I'll deal with this," said Seraph in a low voice, moving until she was between Jess and the young men.
When the older man, presumably their father, was close enough to hear her, she said, more calmly than she felt,
"There were no problems until your sons made them."
The man strode past his sons and stopped not two paces from Seraph, clearly intending to intimidate her with his size.
"My sons, traveler."
Anger was going to make her do something stupid, she knew it, and Jess would be no help at all. Where was Tyr when a diplomatic word was needed? She could have left it to Hanea, but the younger woman had already been seen as weak. If she had to prove herself, there would be bloodshed here.
"One of your boys decided it was a good game to throw mud at a woman who was doing him no harm," said Seraph. She should have stopped there, but she couldn't abide bullies. "Obviously, he was poorly raised. He has no manners."
"Poorly raised, traveler bitch," he snarled. "Who are you to say so?"
Jess, Seraph noticed gratefully, had taken her at her word and dampened the fear he generated. Fear fed anger and might make the man do something more stupid than he otherwise would. Of course, she herself would have to control her tongue or risk pushing the man too far anyway. She knew even before she spoke what choice she had made, throwing away years of iron-willed control and prudence.
"Indeed."
Seraph kept her tones polite, even though she knew that would inflame the man more than if she yelled.
"It seems that they were not the only ones who were ill-taught."
She paused for effect and then borrowed Jess's whispering technique.
"Didn't your mother teach you that bad things happen to people who annoy travelers?"
She didn't know if she wanted to scare him away or force him to attack her. She'd assumed she'd long ago buried all this anger at the Salcenti who hated and needed the travelers. But all it took was a bit of mud to prove her wrong. The anger that flooded her felt good, even cleansing. Whatever she'd wanted to gain by her threat, the people from his group who'd begun to gather around forced him to act rather than run. Perhaps if she had been a man, he could have backed down and not lost face. Perhaps if she didn't have a full bag of memory to remind her how dangerous it was when Salcenti began to lose their respect for travelers, she would have given him a graceful way out.
"Have a care, Seraph," said Hanea in Traveler.
The man took another step closer. He was a big man, but Seraph was used to looking up at people, and a few inches more didn't make much difference to her.
"Your man should have taught you respect for your betters, whore,"
he said on the tails of Hanea's words. Seraph held her tongue. A raised eyebrow and a speaking look at him did the job nicely.
"You? My better? I don't think so."
He raised a hand. Gura sank a bit, ready to defend her, and she could hear the sheath of Tyr's sword rattle as Lair readied himself to draw it. She still might have let him hit her, but for Jess breathing heavily beside her. With a word and a breath of power, she froze his arm in place. When she smiled at the crowd of Salcenti, several of them backed up hastily. She had the feeling that her victim would have backed up too, but he couldn't move his arm from where it was stuck.
"What's going on here?"
said an authoritative voice, and a young man pushed his way through the crowd. Ash-pale hair in a waist-length braid announced his traveler bloodlines as well as a written sign. Soon, he had a wide circle around him.
"Look by the road, mother,"
whispered Jess. Seraph looked, and sure enough, there was an entire traveling clan waiting on alert. Silence had fallen, mostly because the Salsenti group hadn't yet noticed the travelers beside the road and didn't know what to make of a man whose arm hung unmoving in the air.
"Well," he said again, "what goes on here?"
"I am Seraph," she said, "raven of the clan of Isolde the Silent. This one's half-grown sons offered insult to my young friend. We were discussing the issue."
The stranger tilted his head at the man's arm.
"Interesting discussion?"
"No," said Seraph. "I was almost finished. If you'll excuse me a moment." She turned to the man. "I have no more patience with you. I curse you and your sons that if you ever hit a woman or child, you'll lose the use of that which men value most. Now go."
She released his arm and met the eyes of the few Salsenti inclined to linger. The stranger waited until they were gone before he started laughing.
"I'm no raven, but even so I could tell there was no magic to power that curse."
She smiled.
"It doesn't need magic, does it?"
If any of them ever hit a woman or child, they'd remember her words and worry about it. Worry could achieve the effect she wanted more easily than magic.
"Who are you?"
asked Jess, breaking into the shared moment.
"Ah, my apologies, sir. I am Ben Rhone, cormorant and leader of the clan of Rongier, the librarian."
He bowed shallowly.
"If we may join you in your eating, we might exchange stories."
"Come and be welcome," agreed Seraph. There was a fair bit of confusion as the clan of Rongier organized a meal stop, and the Salsenti group packed hastily and left, most eating the remains of their meals in one hand while they started out. The fear on their faces didn't bother Seraph nearly as much as the catcalls that came from the librarian's clan. Her father would never have stood for such a thing, but Ben Rhone was young, and perhaps he felt much the same as the young people who teased the Salsenti. Still, there were older heads about, and Seraph thought that someone should have said something. A glance at the clan's wagons and clothing told her that having a young leader hadn't hurt the clan materially, even if their manners had suffered. Their clothing was without holes or mending, and their wagons were all freshly painted. Seraph's small family stayed close to her as the strange clansmen laid out food and attended to the chores of meal preparation. Doubtless the boys were intimidated by the foreign tongue and sheer volume of noise so many people set to a single task could make. Seraph finished the last of her meal as Ben Rhone approached her with three other men.
"Seraph, this is my uncle Isfane," he said, indicating the eldest of the men. "My cousin, Kalahar,"
was a young man with unusual raven-black hair.
"Kors,"
had reached middle age and middle height, with slightly stooped shoulders.
"This," continued Ben Rhone, "is Seraph, raven of Isolde the Silent, and her family. This young man here is Eagle."
The older man Ben Rhone had introduced as Isfane smiled.
"Well blessed in the order your family is. Will you introduce them?"
There was nothing in the words they spoke to raise Seraph's suspicions, but there was just a little extra stress in Ben Rhone's voice when he named the orders. That stress had been answered with a thread of smugness in Isfane's voice. Seraph bowed her head. "This is my son Jess, Eagle, my son Lair, and my friend Hanea." No one had ever accused Seraph of being a trusting soul. She couldn't hide the orders Ben Rhone had noted, but there was no need to share information unnecessarily. Time enough to clear the matter up if necessary once Seraph knew more about the clan of Rongier.
"May I inquire how it is that there are so few of you?"
asked Kors diffidently.
"I had heard that the clan of Isolde the Silent fell to the sickness years ago."
Seraph nodded graciously. "Only my brother and I survived.
When my brother died, we were left without kin. 2 decades of living with Salsenti had not lowered her awareness of the disgrace of what she had done, so she lifted her chin, daring any of them to comment. I married a Salsenti man, and we lived with him and his family until he died this spring. His relatives turned us out, but they did not know that he had investments in Taella. We are headed there to recover his monies. The men considered what she told them. For a traveler to marry or even lie with Salsenti was expressly forbidden. It happened, but a very strict clan leader could punish the offender with banishment or death. Only Kors looked taken aback, and Benrolne tapped him on the shoulder before he could say anything. Isfain merely said in tones of apparent delight,
Ah, we take the same road. Our clan has business that lies along the road to Taella, and we have friends in the city who are willing to aid us. We'd be more than pleased to lend you escort until our roads part.
There was no way out of Isfain's generous offer without offense, so Seraph nodded. Your escort would be most welcome. Kalahar glanced over at Skew and then moved toward him. Nice horse, he said. My husband's war horse, replied Seraph.
Careful. He's old now, but he was trained not to let strangers approach too closely.
I've only seen a few horses with his coloration, he said. Your husband get him as a war prize?
Yes.
Too bad he's a gelding.
Yes, replied Seraph. But he serves us well as it is. Lair, would you check to make sure we've gotten everything packed?
Haneo waited until they were walking again and the fuss of adding new members had died down before approaching Seraph. You were less than forthcoming, Haneo said quietly. And Skew's never objected to me. But they don't need to know that. I'd rather not have people ruffling through our packs. There's something off about this clan, Seraph replied. Though it's been a long time since I walked with travelers, so perhaps I'm misreading something.
Perhaps you are right to be suspicious, agreed Haneo thoughtfully. They certainly aren't going to be looking for Lair and I to be ordered, not when they know that 2 of us are order-bearers. Although if they have a raven who looks at us, they'll know what you're up to.
I've been looking, said Seraph. The only order-bearer I've seen is Benrolne himself.
I suppose there will be no harm done, said Haneo.
No harm to whom? Asked Benrolne.
Seraph carefully maintained her smile. To us. It's a relief to find a clan to journey with, but it bothers me that we might need your protection. This is a main road. There should be no danger for travelers here. But I worry all the same.
It's not just those hot-headed men, either, said Benrolne in grim tones. There hasn't been a gathering in a long time. The last one was disrupted by Salsenti soldiers, and the clans felt that another gathering might just be setting ourselves up for a Salsenti sword. The illness that swept through our clans 20 years ago took out more than just your clan. If the Salsenti have their way, in another 20 years there'll be no travelers at all.
The clipped note in his voice when he said Salsenti reminded her forcibly of the way some of the more frightened Redurni said magic.
Then it is their doom, said Haneo indifferently. Travelers exist to keep the Salsenti from paying the price of a failure that was not theirs.
What failure?
Said Benrolne explosively, but Seraph saw calculation in his eyes. He was playing to his audience.
A story nattered at by the elderly? It is only a story, and it was old before the shadows fall. It's a myth and no more accurate than the twaddle the Salsenti spout about the gods. There are no gods and there was no lost city. There is no evil stalker. We have paid and paid for a crime committed in an owl's tail. If we don't wise up, we'll be nothing more than a Salsenti minstrel's tale ourselves, something told to frighten small children.
Wise up and do what? Asked Seraph.
Survive, he said. We need to keep food in our mouths and clothes on our backs. We need to teach the Solsenti to leave us alone. As you did that Solsenti bastard who tried to injure Hanea.